My buddies will receive a WBAI tote bag and a member's perk card. Also, to show our appreciation, you will have the opportunity to receive one of three Kindle Paperwhite e-readers we are giving away. To become a BAI buddy, call 212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org and click on the BAI Buddy tab.
This is Brother Cornell West. Precious 12-year-old Tamir Rice, Walter Scott, Freddie Gray, Sandra Bland. Precious lives being stolen by police. Who will stop this? Together we can and must. Join me, Brother Carl Dix, 100 families who've lost loved ones to police violence and thousands more who will stand up to stop it. Police terror must stop. 3 days of powerful resistance in New York City, and it will culminate on October 24th. We're going to gather at Washington Square Park at 11 a.m. You are needed now. Go to riseupoctober.org or call 929-249-7996. Once again now, that's 929-249-7996. Brothers and sisters of all colors, which side are you on?
Hey, Reggie Johnson, engineer, musicologist, and all-around good guy. I've got some questions for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
What year did Bob Fast start Radio Unnameable, the first free-form radio show on the air?
1963.
Too easy. How about name three artists who launched their careers with live performances on WBAI?
That's easy. Bob Dylan.
Yep.
Jose Feliciano.
Mm-hmm.
And Phoebe Snow.
You got it. And where did all this happen?
WBAI.
Where else but WBAI? Help WBAI continue to make history.
Contribute to the fall fund drive beginning October 5th via phone 212-209-2950 or by going to the website give2wbai.org.
Hey, Reggie, I'm not through with you. Got more questions coming.
Dead air. We can't have that.
Hold it, Joe.
Let's see. How about this one?
Tune into the Michael Slate Show this Friday from noon to one right here on WBAI 99.5 FM. We're going to talk about the historic events of Rise Up October coming up this week. We'll hear voices from the October 22nd event, Stolen Lives, hashtag Say Their Names, commemorating hundreds of unarmed people killed by the police. We'll also hear from journalist Leo Nesto reporting at the scene of the nonviolent civil disobedience to shut down the Rikers Island torture chamber. And we'll hear from student organizers about bringing Rise Up October and the big march on October 24th to campuses all over. For more information on Rise Up October, go to riseupoctober.org. And be sure to tune in to the Michael Slate Show this Friday at noon right here on WBAI 99.5 FM, radio that matters.
All right, it's 7 o'clock here at WBAI New York 99.5 FM, also streaming on the web at WBAI.org. And guess what? We're on early today. Who are we? We are the Personal Computer Shoe, and it is October 21st, 2015, and we're ready to do it. Right, Hank?
Yes. Hello, world. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, and this evening, we're going to try out something. Let's hope it works. Michael, are you there? Michael Horowitz.
I am. I hear you fine.
You can hear me fine. And how about you, Joe? You're on a different line.
I hear you fine, but I was unable to hear Michael.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
Can you make some
adjustments? No, there's
there?
Nothing I could do. He better put the radio on. He can't hear. How can he hear? He can't.
Well, put the radio. You put your radio on then. Okay? All right, you put your radio on.
Are we sure that people in the can hear me on the radio?
Yeah, we can hear you.
We can hear you
in the studio.
Okay, so we're trying something different, and I know that they're working hard and putting in phone lines. I see them pulling lines, so progress is being made. But in the meantime, we have to make do with what we have.
They're putting phone lines in?
Yes, you could see them pulling phone lines right now.
Oh, I got to go back there and talk to them.
And you know what? Maybe you could help out.
I know. I'm going to help them.
We're on this evening from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., and for those who have maybe tuning in for Off the Hook, they will be on next week, October the 28th, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. We're preempted.
Then, hello.
Well, I hope so. Then we'll be back on November 4th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And so let's see how this works out. And we are doing a special show. We are fundraising. We are hoping that people will make, you know, make some pledges, because the station really needs money. As much as we gripe, we cry about it, we're at the point where we got to make good on it. You know, people want to say, you know, we like the show. I get a lot of those compliments. They're nice. I thank everyone who says it. But we need your contribution. We really do. And the phone number to call is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. And let me make a comment here. If your past premiums have not been received, we'll try to follow up on it. Send us an email, but send along with that email a confirmation that you have received from the station that they received the money. In other words, the confirmation of the pledge, send it to pcradioshow.org, send it to Joe or send it to Hank. And since we are now united in a single location instead of up at CCNY in one, and the business office is located in Brooklyn, we're in one place, I'll walk it over, I'll bang some heads, I'll try to help out for all the premiums that we haven't made good on, okay? So that's the two.
As long as you're giving them that advice, let me throw in another one. For those of you who may not have received your white paper that we were promised by email, do the same thing. Please write in and ask for it, and we will get it out to you.
Okay. So let me briefly go through what premiums we have, all right? And we keep it simple. It's the same premiums as the last time, but let me go through it. As some people, they don't hear us live on the air. Someone's coughing. Are you coughing, Joe?
Yeah, that's Joe.
Unfortunately, yes.
Why don't you put yourself on mute when you cough, okay?
I don't know how.
You don't know how. I hope you feel better. We have the following premiums, okay? We have the Windows 10 installation 2-DVD set. In other words, you get 2-DVD. It's the full installation of Windows 10, x86 for home, and x64 for home. And this way, you could use it to upgrade your system, and you know, you don't have to worry about mouse trails and when you try to do it as an upgrade. What there is, you can use the full installation disk to upgrade. The first thing it's going to ask you is, what is your serial ID for 7 or 8-1? You key that in, and then you move ahead with it. We have that's a $50 requested donation. We have the same thing for Windows 10 Pro. In other words, if you have a Windows 7 Pro or 8.1 Pro, you go from Pro to Pro to Windows 10 Pro. It's also 2 DVDs. X86 is for 32-bit operating system. X64 is for the 64-bit operating system. Requested donation is $50. It's a 2-DVD set. And I think I'm going to keep offering this until maybe the end of this year, and maybe stop. I don't know. We have the Windows XP support toolkit. And with it, we have the unofficial modification that will, well, we offered this about last year. So there was if you put this modification in, it would extend your security updates on the XP 5 more years, and I guess if you do it now, it'll be just 4 more years. And then I included with that XP is Service Pack 2, Service Pack 3, and the unofficial Windows XP Service Pack 4. No one's complained about it, and basically, these are all the updates.
What do you mean by the unofficial Service Pack 4?
What it is is that it's the last Service Pack release for XP is Service Pack 3, but you've had a whole lot of updates. Instead of trying to get those updates, which are no longer available, it was all put together, and it was called the unofficial Service Pack 4, okay? And that's a $50 requested donation, and we'll probably run this through the end of the year, and hopefully maybe this, if there's a fundraiser, this another fundraiser after this one. If not, maybe we'll just retire it. The other one is the next premium is also $50. It's the Windows 7 Support Toolkit DVD. And there I have the SP1 Service Pack for 64-bit, the Service Pack 1 for 32-bit, and the PC virtualization. In other words, if you don't have hardware multiply and divide, I'm sorry, if you don't have the hardware to do a virtualization, there is a software patch will do it, and this is what will do it. And with it, we'll give you the virtual PC that allows you to run Windows 7 XPM. Now, Windows 7 XPM is a free, legit copy of Microsoft Windows XP to run in virtual mode with either Virtual PC X64 or Virtual PC X86. So that's in the Windows 7 Support Toolkit. Requested donation is $50. By the way, if you want to download these items from Microsoft, they're no longer available. So if you want it, this is the only place to get it.
Yeah, they don't want to encourage anyone using Windows XP anymore.
That's right. So basically what this does, enables you to run with a nice clean copy of XP Pro that is free from Microsoft, but they pulled it off. But it's, you know, hey, when you put it up there, we got it, okay? You're right on that, Micro. And then the last item we have is, listen, you know, if you say, I don't need any of that stuff, what can I do to help WBAI? Make a cash donation and say that your favorite show is the Personal Computer Show. If you donate $25 or more, $25, $50, you know, hopefully as much as you can afford, we will give you a white paper. And with the other donations, you know, with the DVDs, we'll send you also a white paper. Now, the way we're going to do that is you just send us a confirmation that's dated after October 5th that you made a contribution for either a premium or your favorite show where you contributed $25 or more, and we'll send you the white paper. What's in the white paper, okay? Well, we talked.
Is there a minimum donation?
$25. Okay. Now, can you say your favorite show is available for less than $25? The answer is yes, but come on, guys. You got a computer. You can afford $25. I don't want someone making a $1 or $5 donation. I think the lowest is $5 in terms of just making a donation, but come on. You know, the stuff we're giving you is more than $5. So let's make it $25. And also $25 is the minimum to be a member of WBAI, so that's the way I look at it. So this entitles you to be a member of WBAI, and you're able to get this white paper. Now, the white paper is a new white paper that I have, and it talks about how do you go about getting a downloading, and I tell you exactly how you do it. Download the Windows 10 full installation version, and there are different versions. You can get it for 32-bit. You can get it for 64-bit. You can get it for, I think there's about 8 different versions of it, okay? And whatever you want to get.
Why don't you define the full installation version?
Full installation version is you have a pristine hard drive, and you could use this to install Windows 10 fully. And what it requires is that when you do it, you treat it as an upgrade where when it will ask you for your Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 serial number. And if the serial number is a home, you know, a home version, you have to match it up with the downloaded home version. Or if it's pro, you match up with a pro version. This will not work with enterprise. Enterprise means, you know, the big corporations made a special deal with Microsoft, and that's a different matter, and you don't worry about that, okay? And then they have other versions that are pretty good. In fact, I mentioned to a couple of people is that, so right now, if you have the home 32 and the home 64, that's two versions. You have the Pro 32 and 64, that's another two versions. And then they have two more versions, okay? You can download the home 32 and 64-bit version as one program. In other words, if you have multiple machines and some are running 32, some are running 64, you can download the special version that will handle both 32 and 64. And similarly, you can do the same thing for the Pro version. Now, I mentioned it.
Windows 7 used to be.
Huh?
That's the way Windows 7 used to be. You got one DVD for both.
Yes, well.
In the old days.
Well, this one is not that simple because what you download is about 6 gigabytes, and you can't fit that on a single DVD.
Wow.
Okay, so my But the white paper covers that, and my recommendations, if you're going to go for the combo, make sure you have an 8-gig drive available, and that when you download it, you can either create a create the operating system automatically, or you can download the ISO, which is the the binary installation part of it, and store it. And that's what we recommend, because this way, if for any reason you have to redo it again, you don't want to go through that download process. And then they have a 7th version, which, you know, only if people really care, is that they call it the N version, the letter N, like in Nancy. And what the N version is, no browser. And
that must have been mandated by
European Union. European Union. So those are the now what I've included in the white paper.
Actually, does people a favor. The less you use Microsoft's web browsers, the better off you are.
Well, and then what I've also included in the white paper is you will hear it. You're going to hear this part at the top of the second hour when we're on at 8 o'clock. The evolving PC. What that PC market looks like, what you can expect, what the architecture looks like. You're going to find it to be very interesting. I put it at the top of the hour so that, you know, we talk about it for the first 10, 15 minutes. And if you want to, you know, if you're more interested in the Met Cub game, well, at least you'll get this tidbit before the game, okay? So, and then the third part is something I'm going to be doing 2 weeks from now when we're on the air for 2 hours, and that is the printer part of it. The printer field itself has changed dramatically, and I'll give an update on that. So those are the premiums. So the home, Windows 10 home.
Hank, yes. Hank, I believe that Michael has mounted those premiums on our website,
right.
radioshow.org.
Well, Michael, you did it, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me just do a quick recap then, okay? The Windows 10 home installation, 2 DVD set, $50. The Windows 10 Pro installation, 2 DVD set, $50. The XP Support 2 kit, that's very important. It's going to disappear very soon, $50. The Windows 7 Support 2 kit that has the XP Professional free in virtual mode, $50. And your favorite show, $25 and up. And all of these premiums, it's eligible for the white paper. Now, Joe, can you talk about the buddy system?
The buddy system is something that they instituted a couple of years ago, which enables you to make a small monthly pledge, $10 or more per month, which will be deducted directly from your bank account or charged directly to your credit card, and it goes on for a year. And what this does is it not only lets you painlessly support WBAI as you go along on a weekly or monthly basis, but it gives the station management the ability to budget further in the future, because they know that each month for the next 12 months you will be donating your $10 or $20 or $5,000, whatever it is you want to donate each month. As a BAI buddy, there are a number of special premiums that are available to you. There are a number of discounts around the city at museums and other facilities that are available to WBAI buddies. Hank, I think you can give them a way of getting that information.
Yeah, go to WBAI.org and look at WBAI. But look up the buddy system on WBAI.org. Let me go through some of the things that has. Yes.
I just, not to interrupt, I'm not sure if everyone heard Joe. I know that I was hearing Joe at a very low level, so I turned on my radio while he was talking.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true over the air, that Joe's audio is very, very low.
Okay, Stevie's going to make the adjustment.
And there's not much we can do about the way that we have it hooked up right now. I just found out that we can use a conference call, and you've been able to use a conference call for a long time, but no one knew about it.
Can you get Joe on the conference?
Next time. We'll do it next time.
Next time? Yeah. Okay, Joe, can you get closer to your cell phone and speak louder?
I will do everything I can possibly to do that for you, Hank.
Hang on. Oh, I know how to do it. Hang on.
Yep. You're listening to WBAI, New York 99.5 FM. We've got a special show here today from 7 to 9.
Speak up, Joe.
No. And we're trying to prove how desperately the radio station needs money.
I'm sure that the audience can enjoy what Michael is saying. Hank, well, are we going on to that very strange story about the people who are...
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me get to it, okay? Now, let me first tell people that Michael writes a column called Defensive Computing, and some of this stuff really is right up his alley. There's an article here that SunTrust Bank in Atlanta is laying off 100 IT workers, and that's, you know, look, that's the way it is when you run a business. If you think you can do it cheaper, they're moving all the work offshore. But there's a catch. If you happen to be an IT worker that's being laid off and you're one of the 100, to get your severance pay, you have to agree that you will be available on call for 2 years at no pay. What do you think of that?
Well, I think SunTrust has
$189 billion.
Hold on, Joe.
I think that somebody should tell that Sun Bank that Lincoln freed the slaves.
In other words, they're asking you to work for nothing. To get your severance pay.
Within reason, whether it's telephone support or on-site support they might request, but they won't be unreasonable about it. Where they're not being unreasonable about it, in their opinion, is that if you don't agree to it, you don't get your severance pay.
But if other people are being laid off and you treat them differently, you got to treat everyone the same. And by the way, Michael, let me ask Michael a question. You know, from a security point of view, that makes no sense because you're allowing people who are laid off to come back and go through your system.
Yes, it's a bad idea. Disney was shamed into backing off something almost as bad. And one of the articles said SunTrust has $189 billion of assets, and they have to nickel and dime by firing U.S. employees.
Well, you know what? It's they have a right to do whatever they want, but I think that they're violating the law when they're asking people to work for nothing. I'm not a lawyer, but you know what? I would say I'd take the money. If you call me, take me to court if you disagree with me. That's what I would say. And by the way, if I live in Atlanta and we do have listeners in Atlanta. And if you happen to have a bank account there, I'd think twice about leaving my bank account there because what they're allowing is people who are not paid to work on the system. That makes no sense at all from a security point of view. Hey, Michael, did you? I sent you that bit about the FAA issued a warning on batteries that lithium batteries you can't pack them in a suitcase anymore.
Yes. Nothing really changed except the FAA's opinion of how they handle it. Apparently, they're going to be more aggressive in warning passengers that their checked baggage cannot have any loose lithium-ion batteries. If you just have an iPad and you throw that in your checked bag, well, maybe the employees at the airline will steal it, but that's not just to be a fire hazard. But loose lithium-ion batteries, which can be jolted and banged, are indeed a fire hazard.
Well, what happened was that someone was carrying a credit card with a lithium battery, and then all of a sudden the plane had to land because the credit card got on fire.
Well, not the credit card. No, it was one of those, you know, I'm not sure, stewardess is not the right word anymore. I'm not sure what it is.
Flight attendant.
Okay.
When the flight attendants had a little handheld thing for selling beverages and drinks on the
right.
airplane. And it was that little handheld credit card reader or credit card processor that caught on fire. And, yeah, the plane had to make an emergency landing.
You know, in all these years, the one area that really has not progressed is a new development in battery technology.
Yes, it wasn't long ago that Boeing's multi-billion-dollar Dreamliner airplane was delayed for months because that plane's all electronic, everything, and it's powered by lithium-ion batteries, and the batteries the plane used itself were catching on fire.
Yeah.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I think I forgot which was in the Times or the Wall Street Journal. There was an article that the guy, one of the tech writers wrote, and I think I agree with him, but I do have some questions on it. It says, that if your Wi-Fi is it has terrible performance, check your router. And what I said is, like, I have Verizon Fios, which is a modem router. They're attached together. Michael, what do I do?
This is a big subject because
go ahead.
People only care about the speed of their wireless network. And that was basically the whole point of the article in the New York Times a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an exact clone of an article the Wall Street Journal did, I think, back in February of this year, which is basically buy a fancy router, spend $300, and your Wi-Fi will be faster. And that really ignores the elephant in the room, and the elephant in the room is the security of your Wi-Fi and the security of your router, because routers are computers, and the security in general is very poor. Like, many are shipped with default passwords, and more bad guys are hacking into routers rather than hacking into computers. And if your router is hacked, you're in much worse trouble than if one computer is hacked. I mean, the list of bad things that can happen to you if your router is hacked is unimaginable. Every bad thing in the world, computing-wise, can happen to you. So I find these articles extremely annoying. Now, to answer your question, there are three devices. There's a router, there's a gateway, and there's a modem. And like the New York Times will use these words incorrectly because the people who write the articles don't, they're art history majors. They don't know what they're talking about. A modem is what we got in the old days. When DSL and broadband and cable first came out, your ISP, be it Time Warner, whoever, would give you a modem, and one end of the modem would talk to them, and the other end of the modem had an Ethernet port, and you would plug it into one computer. And that lasted for a while until everyone got two or three or four computers. Then people went out and bought their own routers. What the router does is two things. One, it's your source of your wireless network. And perhaps even more importantly, it shares your single high-speed connection to the Internet among multiple computers. A modem is only designed to deal with one computer. But then time progressed, and now companies like Verizon and Time Warner, they will ship you one box, but that box is now a combination of a modem and a router. So that's referred to as a gateway. So if you signed up for your internet access and you have a single box and you have a wireless network, you have a gateway. So the most important thing that you can do, there's 100 steps to make your router or gateway more secure, but the very first one is to change its password. Now, not the password, this is not the Wi-Fi password, but this is the password for the router or gateway device. I mean, that device is a computer. And I mention this because so many internet service providers, I saw it not too long ago with some non-techie person who had Time Warner Cable, their device, their gateway device, it had a default password. This is just horrible security. It's miserable security. So if nothing else, I'd like to encourage our listeners to either if you have to call your ISP and learn how to log on to your router and change the router password. Now, if you know the router's password and you can log on to the router, you can change the name of your wireless network. You can change the password for your wireless network. All that's done by the router and or by the gateway box if you have just one box.
And what do you follow up by?
What do I follow up by?
Yeah, in other words, okay, so you change that, but is that going to make the performance of the router any better?
No, it's not going to change the performance at all. It's just going to make you more secure.
Okay.
And it puts you in a position to read other articles about router security and be able to make the additional changes that everyone needs to make. But many people that I deal with don't realize that the router or gateway is a computer, that you can log on to it. You know, with a web browser, you point to it by IP address, and then you can configure the thing on your own.
Okay.
Just knowing the user ID and password and, I guess, the IP address of the router, that is a huge step up for a lot of people.
Okay. Now, there were two things that the article pointed out. One was that there are two frequencies that operates in. One is, what, 2.8? The other one is 5.4?
Right. Now we're shifting from security to speed.
Right. Go ahead.
Yes,
talk about the speed.
Wi-Fi, in the old days, Wi-Fi ran on a 2.4 gigahertz band. Then a few years later, it was upgraded to also be able to use a 5 gigahertz band. Now, each, when I say band, it's like a range of frequencies. Each wireless band has its pros and cons. The advantage of the 2.4 gigahertz is that because it's a lower frequency, it goes through walls and furniture better. So if you have a big house or a big apartment, you'll be able to get a signal far away from the router.
Longer distance.
The advantage of the 5 gigahertz band is that it's faster. But it's faster if you're in the same room. If you have to go through a bunch of walls or floors or furniture, you're not going to get any reception at all. So each has its pros and cons. And, of course, the New York Times, all they care about is speed, so all they're going to say is use 5 gigahertz.
Now, the other thing was that they said that in terms of performance, if you have a router that is older than 3 years, you should get a new one.
Well, that's an arguable point.
Okay.
There are newer standards. The old standard for Wi-Fi was G. Then they have a faster standard called N, and now the latest fastest standard is called AC, as in air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you that vast majority of people would be very happy with Wi-Fi N, and the speed increase to Wi-Fi AC is negligible. It's like driving your car down the road, the difference between going 150 and 140 miles an hour, you're not going to really notice.
Only if there's no cop there.
There's a difference, but a difference is only if you're measuring it and you're in the same room and blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
I don't think it's that important at all.
Mm-hmm. We're fundraising tonight. The phone number is 212-209-2950. We have a couple of premiums that are really, you're not going to find them anywhere else.
You know, you never need speed unless you don't have it.
So make your donation. Remember, your favorite radio program on WBAI
is
The Personal Computer Show.
Oh, yeah.
A donation of $25 or more will send you the white paper. Michael, the other thing that...
Hank, let me ask you. Have you ever logged on to the Verizon Gateway box that they gave you?
Yes. I changed everything on it.
You have changed.
Yes. Why not? I mean, I got to be stupid not to.
Perhaps for another day, because there's a whole bunch of things that should be changed to make it more secure.
Oh, yeah. By the way, that's the thing now, because like with AT&T, they have a Wi-Fi service that they're going into. Seems like everyone is pushing Wi-Fi and getting away from, hardwired connection. And I don't, to me, I'm very old-fashioned. I still prefer wired, hardwired connection, especially when you're connecting to the outside world to do financial transactions. I just don't trust the Wi-Fi completely.
Well, I agree with you. I do. And, of course, most people don't know how to configure Wi-Fi for the best security.
Oh, I know. They think that, there are different types of encryption, and to them it doesn't matter so long as they have encryption. That's not true.
No, it's not true at all.
Yeah.
That's right. There's actually 4 flavors of encryption,
mm-hmm.
and 3 of them are bad, and only 1 of them is good.
Now, I know
even that good one, if you choose a bad password, you've ruined it. So,
yep. Now, I know that another thing that you've been chomping at the bit about is Windows 10 with their update policy and the constant reminder, it's time to update, it's time to update. And if you don't want to update, guess what? Sometimes they ignore your turndown and they just do it anyway.
Well, this is, I think, a 3-strikes-you're-out issue. You remember, in the beginning, Microsoft started with a first scam, which was reserve your copy of Windows 10. And that was a total scam. There was no need to reserve anything. And then they abused the privilege of Windows Update to install a little nag thing in the system tray that says, go get Windows 10, go get Windows 10.
They've gone beyond the nag
now. That was the first phase of Microsoft being a crappy company.
Mm-hmm.
The second phase of it was they would download Windows 10 to your computer.
Ready to go.
Under the covers without telling you, without asking you. This was discovered by some techie nerd who had a DSL connection, DSL not nearly as fast as Fios or cable. And he would say, why is all of a sudden my internet connection so slow? And apparently it went on for days and days, and he looked into it, and then he found Microsoft was downloading Windows 10 to his computer or computers. You know, that's, as you said just a little while ago, that's 5 or 6 gigabytes for Windows 10. And they're downloading that, and nobody knows. People would just say, hey, what's this folder on the C disk? Where'd this come from?
Uploading.
No, that was phase two. You know, not everybody has a lot of hard drive space, 6 gigabytes, not to mention the bandwidth. Not everyone has the speed that they can download a 6 gigabyte Windows 10, whether you want it or not. So that was phase two of Microsoft being a bad company. And what you're talking about is phase three. Phase three was they're a bad company because they're incompetent. And they screwed up Windows Update, which if you have Windows Update apply bug fixes automatically, Windows 10 was an optional fix. They screwed that up, and it took them a week to fix it.
They made it mandatory.
Yes, they made it mandatory.
And,
out of the blue. It was just a mistake on their part. It took them a week to fix it. So all of a sudden it became mandatory, and people found Windows 10 was trying to install itself. So Microsoft is a bad company for technical incompetence and for just a decision.
Okay, now, it's in your system. How can you get it out?
When you say it's in your system.
In other words,
found that 6 gigabyte mystery folder on your C disk.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you have to Google and read some articles. I don't think it's as simple as just.
You mean you can't do a restore? We got a restore. It should disappear, right?
System restore. I don't know if that would be included or not.
Oh, because system restore.
What you're talking about is phase three. Let's not confuse phase two and phase. Phase three was where they actually started to install Windows 10.
Okay.
As opposed to they just downloaded it but didn't try to install.
Well, when they start installing, that's worse than.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Okay, but if they started installing, I'm saying why not do a system restore?
Well, that's probably one way out of it. I think there's a manual way to get out of it. But if you're not paying attention, it's kind of fuzzy how you get out of it once they start to force the install on you.
Mm.
I'm not sure all the details. This is so bad that some guy named Josh Mayfield, he wrote software to prevent Windows 10 from getting installed. It's something called the GWX control panel. I've heard good things about it from a trusty source. I mean, this is disgraceful that some guy had to invent software people have to install just to prevent Windows 10 from getting installed?
Well, you know, Michael, let me backtrack a little. Just say that if you're buying a new machine and Windows 10 is on it, that's not a problem at all, especially if you have things to run on it and there's no problem running those programs. In other words, if you have a legacy program, I can understand, okay? But
you've changed
right.
the subject.
But I think what you and I and Joe have been talking about is that you have an existing system running either Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, and you don't know if everything that if you go through a conversion will run in Windows 10. And that is the key there. And whenever people ask me about how about an update, I says, well, what are you doing now? And if they're telling me that they're in the middle of an important project, I said don't. Like my daughter called me up, and my grandchildren are doing a special project, and they're on Windows 8.1. She says, should I upgrade? I says, don't do it, because you're going to have some kids, yelling at you that they lost certain files. She says, well, what are the odds of losing the files? I said, very little, but you know what? You don't want to take a chance on it. Now, if it was a brand new machine and you started your project on it, not a problem at all.
Also, I should mention that Microsoft is really taking advantage of the non-techies that use Windows.
Non-techies? Are you kidding me? We have non-techies?
Techies like you and me, we don't let Windows Update run automatically. We hear about the bug fixes and we manually install them, and you and I would never see any of this forced migration to Windows 10. It's only non-techies who let Windows Update run automatically who are experiencing all the problems we just talked about.
Well, one of the things that people have found out is that some of this trigger that causes it is if you run IE. So if you are running with a different browser, that's one way of inhibiting some of the stuff that comes over with the nagging messages and the downloads. In other words, don't run IE.
Well, that's good advice, yes.
Like, for instance, I have I think I have five browsers on my system. I have IE, which I don't run. I have Chrome. I have Firefox. I have Opera, and I have Safari. I have those five browsers. And you know which one I use the most? Opera.
Opera?
Yep. It's very fast. It's neat. Because I find that Chrome, you know, with Google, I think they're getting, you know, they're doing things, too, that I don't like. They're sneaking things
in.
Yeah, I mean,
I flip-flop between Chrome and Firefox, and there are some good things about each, and there are some bad things about each.
But I find that Opera is nice and clean, and I don't have to worry about things sneaking in. And I just recently started running with Safari, and that seems to be fine, too.
Safari on Windows?
Yeah, Safari is written by...
on Windows?
Yes. There's a copy available.
I know, but I can't believe you'd use it.
Hey, this is the personal computer show. We don't discriminate.
You don't
right?
talk about Macintosh.
I discriminate, sure. What does
you discriminate?
About writing software for Windows?
Hey, you know
I
what?
Mean, that's not exactly a core competence.
Now, wait a minute, A personal computer show includes all platforms, right?
We don't talk about Macintosh.
No, we talk about Stevie. That's a different story.
We talk about Macintosh.
You're one of the four people in the country running Safari on Windows.
No, I'm not the only one. You know, I have to tell you, when we were up at CCNY, they were running Safari on Windows up in the reception area.
That doesn't speak well for them.
Oh, come on now. CCNY, it's one of the senior colleges in New York City, in the CUNY system.
All right.
Okay.
Let's agree to disagree.
Listen, let me go over one more thing that I know that you're chomping at the bit with, and that's the Windows 10 activation. I just want to say that the way, you know, if you run with the upgrade, that's fine, and it goes through. You know, if it goes through, you have it activated. But if you use a full installation copy, you have to key in the it doesn't matter whether you do an upgrade or you do a full installation, that when you are finished with the Windows 10 installation, all traces of Windows 7 or 8.1 is gone. And if you want to, you know, if you need the serial ID for 10, you have to know what it is, because you just don't know what it is, because it's changed everything and all remnants of 7 and 8.1 are gone. Are you aware of that, Michael?
No, you're much more interested in installing Windows 10 than I am.
Well, you
so
know what?
You're following this much more than I have.
We have to follow it, don't we? You know?
No, my recommendation is to avoid Windows 10, so...
No. Listen, there's two trains of thought. One is I have I buy a brand-new machine, and right now they're selling machines. You could actually buy a machine with Windows 7, but, you know, you have to look for it.
No. Yes, you can.
No, I said you can, but you have to look for it.
2020, I suspect.
But then 8.1 is really being sold where it's all coming out of inventory, and you get some very good prices on it, and we'll talk about that in the top of the second hour. And now I find that a lot of machines are just available with 10. Well, by the way, I just want to make a quick comment here, is that in terms of running Windows 10, okay, for those who are running netbooks, you know, like the original netbooks with the Atom 230 processor or the 330 dual processor, it ain't going to hack it. Too slow, okay? For the record, I'll tell you that Windows 10 is slower than Windows 7, and Windows 10 is slower than 8.1, and you're going to feel it. And there's a reason for it, by the way. And the reason for it is because in Windows 10, they try to make it as compact as possible so it can go into smaller platforms like tablets. And to do it, what they do is they compress the code. Anytime the code is in need of execution, they got to go through expansion. In a typical system, you don't have to, but if you have to go through expansion, that takes time. So that's part of the penalty.
So an old netbook is best assigned to Linux?
I was going to make a comment there.
A lightweight version of Linux, not a heavyweight version.
Now, I've been doing a lot of testing with Windows 10, and I had been running it on a netbook, and now I find that with some of the Windows 7 updates, they got features in there that if you try to put Windows 10 on, it won't work on the netbook anymore. You know,
well,
to do an upgrade.
To go to a lightweight version of Linux.
So, you know what? I'm going to put a nice version of Linux on. It'd probably be Makulu, and you know, I'll have fun with that. You know, at least I have something to use. And what am I going to use a spare machine for? Upload and downloads, and who cares, you know, who else is running, you know? It doesn't matter. I just use for upload and download.
You know, speaking of old netbooks, the obvious thing is always, especially if you're running Windows XP, which is most of them were and is now somewhat dangerous, I mean, the obvious answer was always to install a lightweight version of Linux like Lubuntu. But there's now another option. I don't know if you've heard of it. I can't plug it because I haven't tried it. I just like the concept. It's from a company called Neverware, and they're selling basically a version of the Google's Chrome OS. They're not selling. They're selling it to big companies, but individuals can use it for free. A version of Google's Chrome OS that you can install on old XP machines.
Well, you can. I think there's a version called Chromium OS, which is a hack of the Chrome operating system, is available for download free, to,
yes,
and it runs as Linux.
They started with Chromium OS, and then they're adding drivers so it'll work with older hardware.
Okay.
And it's a company right here in Manhattan called Neverware. I haven't actually done it, but I like the concept.
Oh, okay. Now, back in the middle of September, I had Alfred Poor on because of the Jewish holiday, and he covered wearable tech in two areas, and it was quite interesting, and many people had made comments about it. You know, one of the things about wearable tech is, where is the security? Because, you know, you're talking about health data. That data has to be secure. And how many companies are coming up with all these apps are security conscious or making the wearable tech a security non-vulnerable, okay? The other thing has to do with accuracy. I was surprised that in a study that was done recently that 7 out of 8 devices were off by 15% in terms of accuracy, and one was off by more than 25%. So I said to him,
accuracy of what?
The metrics. In other words, your pulse rate, the temperature, and all things like that. It wasn't accurate. Now, Alfred is now addressing, which is a good one to think about, is you have these wearable techs. Where's the power coming from? I mean, do I have to take off my wearable tech device so that the
lithium-ion battery, of course. Where else?
So I have to charge it up every night, and once it's off me, where's the monitoring, okay? And Stevie, you're going to cue up the Alfred's segment on wearable tech in terms of where's the energy or the power coming from.
Are we ready to go now?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
This is Alfred Poor from HealthTechInsider.com, a website about wearable technologies for health and medical applications and supporting technologies. And tonight, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the enabling technologies that are going to be essential to the adoption of wearable technology for all kinds of purposes, fitness and as well as health and medical kinds of applications. Topic is the question of power, of electricity, of energy. How are we going to power these things? The big issue is that in order for wearables to be successful, they're going to have to disappear into our lives. Don't need to fuss with them and bother with them. And one of the big problems with a lot of wearables at this point is you have to constantly attend to them to recharge them, to keep them powered. Anything that you have to plug in every day is something convenient and easy to use. So one of the big problems we're going to have going forward is to figure out how to power these things more effectively, more conveniently. And the answer is going to be energy harvesting. Now, when it comes to energy harvesting, there are basically 4 different sources of energy that are available to us. There's light, there's heat, there's radio frequencies, and there's mechanical energy, motion. Now, light is very familiar. We're all familiar with solar energy, and solar cells take sunlight or other forms of ambient light and convert them into electricity. They're very convenient and affordable in many cases, but the problem is that they often take up large amount of surface area, and they only work when the light's shining. So if you're trying to power a watch, say, that has a very small surface area, and it's sometimes under your clothing, it's not going to see the light, so therefore it's not going to get powered. So solar energy just isn't going to be a very good solution. solar energy or photovoltaic energy where you're changing light into electricity, probably not going to be a broad solution for a lot of wearables. So let's move on to the next one, heat. Now, heat, we use heat for all kinds of power on a large scale. For electricity, the common way of making electricity is to get a heat source, whether it's nuclear or coal or natural gas. But the idea is you get heat up water, change the water to steam. That expansion drives turbines. Motion of the turbines is converted into electricity. Water vapor is recovered, and it can be heated up again and so forth. In order for this to work, you need a very high temperature differential. Changing the water from liquid form to the steam form takes a lot of energy. However, there are devices, there are materials that can actually work with a much lower temperature differential. There's a group in Korea, for example, that has a flexible device, could actually be worn on the skin, and it can generate usable amounts of electricity with a temperature differential of as little as 40 degrees or even less. So this means that working off the skin temperature to the ambient air could generate enough electricity to trickle charge a wearable device, especially a sensor or some other device that's sending information to some controller like your smartphone or some controller that you're wearing on your body elsewhere. We're a bit of a way off before that becomes practical, but it is a viable option for the future. Another one that I find particularly interesting is radio frequency. Now, as you are probably aware, we're just surrounded by radio waves all the time. Broadcast television and radio, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, cellular phone signals. The fact that we can pick these up anywhere in our houses, outdoors, shows that there's radio frequency energy all around us. The trick is to capture those waves and turn that energy into a simple current that could be used to power a device or to charge a battery. And there are a number of companies that are making some very good progress on doing this sort of thing. One company in particular has created a tiny little semiconductor flexible substrate device. It's printed on a plastic film, and it's actually a series of antennas that are etched into this material. Antennas collect the radio waves of different frequencies and can convert them into electricity, and it can produce enough electricity to power a tiny little radio transceiver that's able to receive and send information. So no batteries required at all. So this, again, could be coupled with a sensor on some part of the body, and information could be sent from that and received someplace else, as well as instructions could be sent to the sensor to cause it to actuate, to do different kinds of things. And all of this without power, never need to be recharged. The fourth possibility for energy harvesting of interest to wearable technology is the whole idea of motion, mechanical energy. You can think about somebody had a stair climber that they were walking on. Well, the motion of stepping on those stairs could turn a turbine of some sort and generate electricity. Well, on a much smaller scale, we're very interested in coming up with ways to translate that motion into electricity. There's a whole family of materials called piezoelectrics, which are fascinating materials. Basically, if you apply a force to it, it generates electricity. And the cool thing is that when you apply electricity to it, it can generate a force. Now, you have probably experienced piezoelectrics in your life, and you may not even have been aware of it. If you have a propane grill, a barbecue, and you have one of those igniters. Some of them have igniters that use a battery for the power, but sometimes it's just a button that you push and it clicks. Or you may have one of the handheld igniters that has a handle that you squeeze and it clicks when you squeeze it. If the device doesn't take any batteries, chances are good it's using a piezoelectric. And what's happening here is when you squeeze that handle or push the button, it causes an impact on a crystal of special material. And when that crystal gets whacked, it generates an electrical charge. And the electrical charge creates the spark, which ignites the propane. So you bang it, it makes a spark, and the propane lights. So that's kind of cool. Well, that whole idea of translating motion into electricity is something that a lot of researchers are looking at very closely. And there's one outfit that has developed a piezoelectric plastic film, a polymer film, that as it flexes, generates electricity. And that's pretty cool. In fact, this group has created a film that generates enough electricity that it could charge a pacemaker, could keep a pacemaker charged. And in fact, they have done some clinical trials with pigs, mounting this small device on the surface of the pig's heart. And as the pig's heart beats, each beat generates a little bit of electricity, and that provides a trickle of electricity to the batteries, and that keeps the batteries for the pacemaker charged. This is important because for humans, pacemakers are wonderful things, but the problem is they run on batteries, and the batteries can run down in 3 to 5 years. And so every 3 to 5 years, somebody with an embedded pacemaker needs to go through a procedure to replace the batteries. Now, it's not a very risky procedure, but it'd be a whole lot less risky to not have to change the batteries at all. So if we could come up with an energy harvesting device that would produce electricity just from the natural motions within the body, we could create embedded sensors, embedded devices like pacemaker that would never need to have its batteries changed, which is pretty cool. So this is how energy harvesting is going to help wearable technology disappear into our lives. We won't have to think about it. We don't have to go searching for a USB port that we can plug it into it at night or two or three times a day or whatever it might be. It will just work. It'll be sort of like the old self-winding watches. You never have to change the battery. It just keep itself wound up just by wearing it. So this is the future. This is where I think we're headed for wearable technology. If you're curious about this sort of thing, I encourage you to come by the website. It's www.healthtechinsider.com. And while you're there, I encourage you to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter. And if you have any questions, please feel to write me. I'm Alfred Poor, and you can reach me at apoor@verizon.net, apoor@verizon.net. And thank you so much, and I'll send you back to Hank. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Alfred. That was an excellent presentation. And, you know, we always talk about wearable tech and all the fascination of all the things associated with it. But, you know, the simple things like where's the power coming from? Where's the security? Is it accurate? Those are the things we must address. Michael, are you still on there? Have you thought about defensive computing as it relates to wearable tech?
No, I'm not into wearable technology yet.
Okay, but you got to, you know, as sooner or later it has to be addressed.
Yes, and I suspect there'll be a scandal or two further down the road.
Now, wait a minute. Are you waiting for a scandal to happen before you do any reporting on it?
Well, yeah, I don't have any wearable tech. Do you?
Oh.
Do you wear a Fitbit or something?
No. Well, first of all, you know, I don't know if you heard the show a couple weeks ago, but if the accuracy is not there, why am I wearing it?
Yeah, I haven't been convinced yet either.
You know what it's like? It's cool to wear it. It's like, oh, look what he's got. Oh, boy, look what he has. But you know what? Form follows function, okay? It's got to satisfy a requirement. And when that study was done by one of the universities that the wearable techs are not accurate. Now, Alfred's comment was, at least it gives you a trend. In other words, if you are taking blood pressure, you could see it's going up or going down. It may not be accurate, but at least you could see it going up or down. And 15%, well, it may sound like a lot, but when one of them was off by 25%, okay, that's disconcerting when it's off by 25%.
I can't believe there's something you wear that watches your blood pressure. I mean, every time I've had mine taken, I have to squeeze my arm. Like, how does that work?
Anyway, well, now wait a minute.
I'm not into this.
Now, when you go to the doctor, you have your blood pressure taken. That's pretty accurate the way he does it, right? And
yeah,
now you can understand why they say that with the wearable tech, it's off by 15%. And if the doctors realize that, that's good. If they don't, they could be prescribing medicine and medication to you that is not appropriate because it's based on a bad reading.
Yep.
Okay. Hey, Michael, before you get off the air, and I know that you've been very good to stay with us, can you tell us more what defensive computing is and how they can learn more about it?
Well, my blog is at computerworld.com. It has a very long, hard-to-remember website address for the blog. So it's aliased. It's defensivecomputing.info, which you don't see very often. The MTA uses it here in New York City, mta.info. But I think me and the MTA are the only ones that use the .info.
Well, now that you've given it out, people will go to it, right?
Hopefully.
Okay. And before you leave, can you tell everyone why we need people to make donations to WBAI?
Well, it's obvious as we try to get two people on the air at the same time, the studio is not quite up to...
Wait a minute. You're not exactly right. We do have you and I on. That's two. We're trying to get a third person on.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, I had to...
phone calls for decades, and you haven't taken phone calls now in a long time.
5 months.
Well, I just found out that we can do conference calls. This information was supposedly out there, but no one bothered to tell us about it.
Does that mean we'll be able to accept phone calls?
No.
No, conference calls.
No, conference calls is like I could talk with you and Joe, and maybe I can get David Perry on.
He knows what a conference call is, Hank.
But the reason why we don't want people dialing in is we can't give them a number because we have to put it on delay. That's the reason why.
Maybe someday.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for spending the hour with me, and I hope you have a...
Sorry we couldn't have Joe on at the same time.
Well, now I cut Joe off, and I told him...
Joe will be here for the second hour.
He'll be on for the second hour, and I know that one of the subjects that I want to talk about, you have comments on, but maybe we'll catch you 2 weeks from now, and you can give me your post-mortem comments on... What I'm going to be talking about is the PC that's evolving to something else. Okay, Michael, thank you very much. And listen, you think the Mets will win tonight?
Oh, I have no idea.
Of course they'll win.
What kind of
question is that?
I'm talking to Michael.
Doesn't it seem like they've used up all their luck for the year? I mean, how lucky can you get?
Oh, wait a minute.
The magical
you know,
Mets?
I have another minute before I have to get off. But did you see the movie Back to the Future?
No, yeah, no one ever saw that movie.
The guy's name was McFly, and you know what his prediction was?
It's been all over the news.
Yeah, McFly, the odd-looking professor says, hey, he was in the future in the year 2015, and guess who won the World Series?
Right, the Cubs. Everyone knew it was a fictional movie.
Right, exactly. Hey, Ken, the Cubs
Michael,
are not going to beat the Mets.
Thank you. I'll talk to you later, okay?
Okay, goodbye.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. Now, let me just make a quick break. This is WBAI-FM 99.5, and we are fundraising. And let me just make the following announcement, okay? Welcome back to the Personal Computer Show. We're on this evening from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., and for those of you who are just joining us now, the Personal Computer Show had been on since 7 p.m. We are preempted next week. And next week, Off the Hook, whom we preempted this week, will be on from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. But we will be back for a two-hour show on November the 4th. November the 4th will be on from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And the trilogy of the white paper that we're making available for the fund drive, that's when I'll cover printer technology. And in the meantime, while Stevie is bringing up Joe on the phone line, let me just go over what we're doing tonight. The phone call number is 212-209-2950. And if you don't know that number, you know that's the number that we need people dialing up. 212-209-2950. And we need you to make contributions to WBAI. And now, although we're scheduled from November 4th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., it's not one of those things where, hey, Hank, you're on November 4th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. If we don't raise some serious money, and I really mean we have to raise some serious money, we may be preempted again, okay? Now, it's bad enough that we're preempted next week, and we're not, you know, having the normal one-hour time frame, but we're on 2 hours for November the 4th. But if we don't raise very serious money, there is no faith that there's a listening audience out there. And I know there's a listening audience, but we always get email from people. Now, the culture of personal computing is, how do you get the most for the least? Well, consider this. How can you support the Personal Computer Show where there's chock full of information that we give you, and it's not something that you can find easily in print or elsewhere? Like, for instance, we have premiums available. Now, I'll name you two premiums that you won't find on the Internet. That is the Windows XP Support Toolkit. And on the Windows XP Support Toolkit, we have a hack there that will give you another 4 years of security updates because of the hack. In other words, what Microsoft did was they said, okay, enterprise. In other words, enterprise means the big corporations that are paying the big bucks. Here is a change we're going to make in the operating system. And if you have it, we'll give you the latest continuing security updates for Windows XP. We have that. It's available. It's on this DVD. We have, for those who don't have Service Pack 2 and 3, it's there in case you want to reload your XP. You could have this 2 and 3 available to refresh your operating system. We also have, since the Service Pack 3 was released, there were, I think 190 or over 200 updates. All this is in Service Pack 4. It's an unofficial Service Pack 4. And if you think these updates are available online from Microsoft, they're not. They're floating around. You don't know how good they are. This, I know, was unofficially released. It's there. We have it. This XP Toolkit, we'll probably have it available through the end of the year, and maybe that's the end of it. But if you need it, the requested donation is $50. That's very reasonable. It's on a DVD. We have available also the Windows 7 Support Toolkit. The Windows 7 Support Toolkit has the Service Pack 1 for both the 64-bit operating system as well as the 32-bit operating system. And we have the hardware virtualization software. In other words, to run a virtual operating system, you need the hardware. But if you don't have the hardware, there is a software part to it that can enable you to run virtualization. That's on this DVD. And on this DVD is the virtual PC. In other words, you can run a virtual PC either in 32-bit mode or 64-bit mode. And this is what's no longer available on any website because Microsoft took it all down. That's Windows 7 XPM. Windows 7 XPM is the professional version of Windows XP, free, legit, without any strings attached from Microsoft, if you can still get it. We have it. It's on the Windows 7 Support Toolkit. Request a donation, $50. And then bringing everything up to date, we have downloaded, and I've tested all this stuff so that you don't have to go through the trouble of doing it. Microsoft has available, of which you got to go through signing your name and your password and give away your third grandchild and so on. Then you can download the full distribution installation of Windows 10 in both Home and Pro. In other words, if you happen to have Windows 7 Pro or Windows 8.1 Pro, you want to get the Windows 10 Pro installation DVD. It's a two DVD set. Request a donation is $50. That's two DVDs. One is for one of the DVDs is for the 32-bit, and the other one is for the 64-bit. And this will enable you to have a clean install of Windows 10, and all you need is to have the serial ID of your existing 7 or 8.1 Pro to key in, and then it will go on from there. We have similarly the same thing for Windows 10 if you happen to be running 7 Home Premium or 8.1 Home Premium. This is Windows 10 Home Installation 2 DVD set, both in 32 and 64-bit mode. Requested donation is $50. So that's $50 for all each of the four. It's make it simple. The Windows 10 Home is two DVDs. Windows 10 Pro is two DVDs. XP Support is a DVD. Windows 7 Support is a DVD. $50 each donation. Now, we also ask you if you don't need any of that stuff, hey, make a cash donation. The cash donation could be your favorite show. Now, I know what your favorite show is. If you're listening to us, we are your favorite show, at least for this moment in time. If you make a cash donation of $25 or more, we will send you a white paper with a confirmation of your pledge. Now, the reason we're doing this is because one of the problems that we have had at BAI is premium processing. Well, if the station collects your money, you got a confirmation, a piece of email, send it to PC Radio Show, and we will send you automatically the white paper, and Joe will explain where the white paper is. And Joe's a little late in getting out. Joe, are you there?
Oh, I'm here. I just don't have the vaguest idea where the white paper is. I lost it.
Well, the original white paper we had in early year is no longer available, but the new one will be available. I'm doing the finishing touch on the show that I'm going to do 2 weeks from now on printer technology, and that will be included with it. When we were on the air 2 weeks ago, I talked about Windows 10 in a full install, how do you download and all that. It's all in the white paper. And tonight I talked about the that I will be talking about the evolving PC. And you're going to be interested in some of the stuff. And I know Joe keeps saying to me, so what are you recommending? Well, we'll get to that. And the third part of the trilogy on this white paper, which will be available probably in a couple of days, is the printer technology part. And when you get confirmation of your pledge of $25 or more or one of the four premiums, just let us know, and Joe will send it to you. And Joe, can you comment more on that? On like you want the confirmation copy of the email? Is that it?
No, all I'm saying, it really, Hank, is if they put when they send it, to put it in the subject line, white paper request. Attach the whatever confirmation you got from WBAI to show that you did. Subsequent to the October 5th date, make a pledge, and Hank or I or somebody will see to it that by return email you will get a copy of the white paper Hank is discussing.
Right. Now I'm going to transition to talk about the evolving PC, and I broke this up into four sections. The Windows PC, and I had this as a bullet point, and Joe says, really? The Windows PC, believe it or not, is at cost of or lower than that of a Chromebook today. And Joe says, really? Cheap? It can be cheaper than a Chromebook? The answer is yes. Another thing I'm going to talk about is what's under the cover of these low-cost notebooks. And one of the problems that we have with these low-end notebooks is you got so many different processors. How do you know, how do you measure what between one and the other? And I'm going to talk about how you do that. And I'm going to talk about something that people really, really, R-A-R-E, really talk about is the total processing versus single-thread processing. That's important, okay? Now, the Chromebooks were developed by Google, and they're classified as notebooks. And there's two distinctions about the Chromebooks. It's defined as a PC that does not run Windows, but yet will perform many of the basic functions of a PC. Almost all the units, except for one that Google sells, are low-cost units, and many are available for under $200. These units have been primarily purchased in the school system. There is the capability to easily do a factory refresh on these systems. If, however, it's cloud dependent, and that's one of the sore points. In the education system, these are ideal units for students. The students can use these for learning, and if in some way they misuse the system and it causes system degradation or crash, it's no big deal to do a factory reset. Now, in the real world, in your home, if there's no cloud access, the Chromebook is pretty much crippled. And by the way, I just want to comment that at home, the internet does go down on me. I have Fios, and, once in a while, there is no service at all. When I call up, they say, we're sorry, we don't have service right now. We'll try to get back and get it up and running. But in the meantime, if you want something on that Chromebook, tough.
And Fios never went down on me. Fiber optics. How's it going to go down?
It has. And we'll go through that later, okay? Now, I've never liked the idea of how Chromebook handles printing, but that's another story. Now, within the classroom, there is the ever-present Wi-Fi, so being on the cloud for everything is not a problem at all. But if you happen to be in other locations where the internet is just not available, well, what do you do? Well, that's why I have a preference for a Windows notebook that is low cost to test programs and not to do testing on my existing production machine. And Joe, I think you agree with me on that. Now, up until recently, the same hardware for the Chromebook, but installed with Windows, because you could see the hardware is the same, but when it's installed with Windows, it costs more. And I've been thinking of buying a Chromebook, which has a sister unit sold operating system with Windows. So in this way, I know the hardware is compliant with Windows, and I can do my own you know, reinstallation and get Windows up and running on a Chromebook. Now, I've been receiving a lot of requests from people who just want a simple notebook to access the internet, and they only have light-duty office functions such as word processing, some simple spreadsheet, if at all, and they like to be able to do run TurboTax on it. Chromebooks can't do that. But now,